Not only, and let's not talk about this on the real episode, because okay. we talked about cartoons enough.
Yeah, too much.
But not only did Josie write that episode, Josie is the reason they used Rose Wilson yes. at all. Like, Josie pitched that they use her and, like, really, like, basically her outline being really good. There was some resistance internally to using the character, and just because they liked the outline, they wound up using it.
Oh. Yeah, it did take actually like 2 years for that outline to actually get made, because there is so much resistance to being like, oh, well, we don't want it to be like the gritty like version that Teen Titans was, because yeah, this is the silly version, and then they eventually did end up going yeah, with it.
I think because Slade Wilson was such a big part of old Teen Titans, they were like deliberately not using him, yeah. and so using his daughter felt like maybe against the rules.
No, that makes sense. And I also get that you don't want to like Muppet babies your villains.
Yeah.
Being
yeah.
like, ah, it's this person's daughter. It's the Joker's yeah. nephew.
I mean, the good thing about Rose Wilson, Ravager, is that, like, obviously she looks identical to Slade Wilson, but if you don't know who Slade Wilson is, she is her own villain, too.
Yeah, like, she's not called Deathstroke.
Yeah, it's not like, here's Slade 2.
Yeah, the only reason I knew who she was because of the costume, but then I'm like, ah. Because that guy scares me. When I used to watch that old show, and it's like, he's got like everything in his pockets to stop the Teen Titans. It's like, it's like a bad guy, I don't like that guy. No, look, no offense. Mm-hmm. That guy scares me.
Uh-huh. My favorite thing about him is the deal with his name is when they invented him, he was called Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yes.
And their idea was to mostly call him the Terminator. That yeah. was the main thing they called him. Yeah. And then the Terminator comes out. So they just start calling him Deathstroke. Then they want to use him in the Teen Titans show, which is still technically for kids. So they were like, Deathstroke is too harsh a name for your main villain on this children's show. And they're like, well, I guess his first name is Slade. Like, great, just call him Slade. And now, like, most people just know him as Slade.
And then we have Deadpool as Wade Wilson. Yes. Slightly as a joke.
Yes.
Yes, as a joke about how badass Deathstroke was.
The joke is Rob Liefeld drew Deadpool. He says... Rob Liefeld has a great joke about it, which is, he goes, why do people think I ripped off Deathstroke when I was trying to rip off Spider-Man?
Yeah, yes! Because they have the same shaped eyes, for the love of God!
Yep.
But anyway, so he in his head, he's like, oh, I'm going to draw basically Spider-Man. He draws Deadpool, hands the Deadpool drawing to Fabian Nicia, who was writing it, and Fabian Nicia goes, come on, man, this is just Deathstroke. And then he's like, fine, I'm going to call him Wade Wilson. Yeah.
I never, ever, ever. Are you guys recording?
We are.
Okay, good. Because that's good. That's a good nugget anecdote thing, Zwick. Slade Wilson, Wade Wilson. I've literally, that had never occurred to me ever. That's so cool. All right, hold on. Give me one sec, and then we're going to get started. One sec. It's been a long, long getting from there. Hello there, and welcome to Science Friction. I'm your host, Stereos Kokonos. This is the sci-fi comedy game show where comedians earn points for their opinions and how close those opinions are to my opinions. Pretty much anytime they say something that pleases me, they get points. And speaking of they, we got Josie Campbell, Marley Halperin-Grazer. Say hi, guys.
Hi, this is Josie Campbell.
And this is Marley Halperin-Grazer.
Now, you're probably hearing this after the last episode. I had a whole thing planned about Star Trek. We're talking about Batman so much. The siren song of Batman's call. How can you not talk about Batman? But not this time. We're going to focus up on Star Trek. We're going to stick to our script. And speaking of the script, the first thing we do on this show, Marley, tell me your Jeopardy anecdote.
One time, when I was a kid interested in entertainment and television production, my mom was basically trying to figure out what kind of field trip or internship or something I could do, and she got in touch with the local PBS station, who, luck would have it, was filming a Dom DeLuise cooking show. And they brought me on set, and I hung out with Dom DeLuise for a day on his cooking show.
Okay, well, now... Josie, for 20 points, can you guess the first follow-up question I'm going to ask?
I mean, I'm going to guess is, why did your mom think that would be a fun thing for you to do?
No. Okay, you get 10 points because that's funny, but that's not what I was going to ask. Was he wearing the hat?
Oh, I believe so, yes.
Okay. Did that hat look like real sweated in?
There was definitely a sweatiness about him in general. Yeah. I mean, the thing that was funny about it was the two things that were funny. The premise of the show was healthy cooking with Dom DeLuise, which, first of all, why is he your go-to for that at all? Mm-hmm. Why does anyone think he's the one you ask about healthy cooking? Mm-hmm. But so the two things that were funny about it is he would be like, oh, here's this new recipe. Oh, delicious. So low in sodium, so low calories. It's perfect. Couldn't be better. And then they'd be like, cut. And they'd be like, how is it? And he's like, it needs salt.
Of course it does. God damn it. You're drinking low sodium soup. It tastes terrible.
And then the other funny thing about it is Dom DeLuise was by such an order of magnitude, a bigger deal than anyone else in the building. If they had a director, which they may not have, Dom DeLuise was doing all the directing while in front of camera. So he just kept saying, like, oh, now we're going to go over here. Okay, we're going to skip this. We're going to do this part now. You'll edit this in like this. And at one point in the control booth, like, I definitely asked the guys, like, oh, are you going to be able to edit this together into something that's, like, coherent? And the guy was like, no, I don't think so. And to the best of my knowledge, this thing never aired.
I've never heard of this thing. Because it's like, look, I know a little bit about Dom DeLuise and PBS's programming. So, like, yeah, I'm something the whole time. Like, what is it? What is this? Was this like a special episode of Hugh Hauser or something? Like, was this like a one-day roll-in or whatever? Oh,
yeah, I bet what it was a pilot that failed. I bet Dom DeLuise was trying to get a cooking show on PBS.
Poor Dom DeLuise. Wait, what was I going to say about Dom DeLuise and cooking shows? Okay, Zwick, while I'm trying to think of what to say next, can you roll in the clip from Studio 60?
I am a Christian, tried and true, baptized at age 11. So unlike the liberals, gays, and Jews, I'm going straight to heaven. But if you feel you've been cheated and our sordid content lets you down, we'll happily do the favor of an intellectual reach around.
We'll happily do the favor of an intellectual reach around.
Go on.
We'll happily do the favor of an intellectual reach around. We'll happily do the favor of $100 hookers reach around.
Oh, but that's not Dom DeLuise. Oh, okay. Marley and Josie, for 50 points, what am I thinking of? It's the clip from Studio 60 where they're doing the Crazy Christians comedy show, and it's like a comedy game show about why Christianity is wrong, and it's like, way to go, Sorkin.
I mean, is that not every episode of Studio 60?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
20 points, Marley.
Nah.
Okay. Marley's with 20. Josie's got 10. Wait, hold on. I'm so sorry. I have to look this up. Wait, the 2,000-year-old man. I'm so sorry, listeners.
I mean, we're not going to know because I think, Asterios, we're finding out that you are the entirety of the audience who watched Studio 60.
I watched every episode of that stupid show.
What?
I did. Me and Alex Barrett.
No, you come down on the 30 Rock line or the Studio 60 line, and then you're not allowed to change. And I came down on 30 Rock.
I mean, look, 30 Rock was way, way better, but here's the interesting thing about Studio 60, by the way, is it's the Carl Reiner clip. I'm mixing up my fat white guys. I'm so fat racist. Me and Joan Ford and Jeffrey Golden, all of us talking on the phone, we're all friends in college. We would watch Studio 60 every week from the offices of Mad TV. So we were in a late night sketch comedy show watching what a crazy coke addicted guy thought of sketch comedy shows. And it was a very surreal experience. I remember those nights so well because it was so great. We would watch, it was like Thursday night shit on NBC, because they would run, oh no, ABC would run Carpoolers and Cavemen.
Oh, wow.
So we were watching.
So like the golden age of TV right there.
You all were like into Carpoolers, right? Like that wasn't really ironic.
Well, because here's the thing, we were all rooting for Bruce McCullough, who is the show.
Right.
Bruce McCullough from The Kids in the Hall, he was also the showrunner on Carpoolers. And we were all like, we want Bruce McCullough to succeed, so we will all trick ourselves into liking this.
Well, in Studio 62, because that was Mark McKinney.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Studio 60 played a trick on comedy fans because they would be like, Mark McKinney's in it, and the woman from The Office who played Pam or what was the Lily? I forget. It was
Dawn in the British Dawn. Office.
Yeah. Yeah, they had Dawn from The Office, and then they got Nate Corddry in there, and they're like, well, he's like Rob Corddry. and so there's like, it's this weird thing. Oh, and then they also put fucking Chandler in there, who's like hilarious. I don't know why this never works in Hollywood, but if you put 11 comedians in something, it's terrible. It's just always terrible.
Yeah. No, it was a weird show. It's weird to make a drama about comedy starring comedians all being completely
dramatic. Like, they're not allowed to be that funny. I mean, I assume that they weren't allowed to be that funny because the show was not that funny.
And just like weird,
great.
Like sanctimonious scenes where like Nate Corddry is like actually angry at his parents because they call it skits. Yes. And it's like, yes, comedians do prefer the word sketch, but we don't care that much. It's not a big deal.
Like, look, comedians are angry at our parents for other reasons.
Yeah. Yes. All right. 30 points to you both for agreeing with me so hard about Studio 60. Studio 60 is this weird thing that comedians love to hate, and everyone else is like, why are you talking about this?
You seem to have...
No one remembers this was made.
Yeah, exactly. And we're like, you don't remember that there was a four-part finale where one of their brothers got kidnapped in Iraq, and someone else is having a baby, but the baby's in danger? And they're like, no, we don't remember that.
Do you think journalists had a similar relationship with Newsroom?
Oh, hell yes. I tried to get into the Newsroom. I tried
it's
so hard.
It's so bad. It's like a parody of an Aaron Sorkin show. Like, he's like, I will dial this up to 11, but be as humorless about it as possible.
But they do this. They pull the same trick where they're like, Sam Waterston's in this. You like Sam Waterston, right? Everyone loves Sam Waterston. And it's like, well, yes. But you can't, because it's, all right, it was Sorkin, all right, we're going to play a game, Sorkin and Sork out. We're each going to name a Sorkin thing we like and say why, and a Sorkin thing we don't like and say why. And I'm going to take the easy one, Moneyball. I love Moneyball because you wouldn't know it was written by Aaron Sorkin. Like, it doesn't have a lot of his bullshit Sorkinisms, like, hectoring, like, shrewish women yelling at white men who are right, even though they might have a small, superficial personal problem, like, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm still right. Or, like, I'm a this, but I'm still right. Like, Moneyball also gave us, what's the name of the big fat guy who's thin now from the movie about...
Jonah Hill?
Jonah Hill. It also...
That's... It's just as a comedy guy, that's a very funny person to just name to not remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm terrible. Oh, by the way, here's why I may sound a little choppy, audience. I'm on keto. This is my first week of keto. I'm on day 5 of keto, so I'm dizzy all the time. My heart won't stop beating for some reason. And I don't mean like, well, obviously your heart, but I mean like really beating in a way where it's like, I'm really noticing my heartbeat and it's stopping me from being able to sleep. Like, it's a real, Wait, I'm sorry, Josie, what?
Can I give you some points to like lie down and take a rest?
I'll take, 10 points to a stereo, so I'll take them. But the thing is, I've lost like 10 pounds. It works. This keto thing, wait, Marlene,
like, it's just making your body run on hummingbird mode?
Yeah, or Homer Simpson as a hummingbird mode.
Right.
Yeah. This keto stuff, my girlfriend's
wasn't
doing
that
keto.
Are you thinking of the apocalypse Y2K Halloween episode where Krusty the Clown's pacemaker is set on hummingbird?
Okay, that's another 20 points for Marley. No, I'm thinking of there's an episode of The Simpsons where I'm sorry, Marley, and that's another 20 points because you're right. Marley's now up to 90 points. No, Apu being on hummingbird mode. Because I think there's an episode of The Simpsons where they're looking at security camera footage from the Quickie Mart, and Apu went 96 hours without sleep, and he's literally...
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny to draw people flapping their wings like flapping their arms like hummingbird wings.
Yeah, because it's funny either way. Either you draw them like blurs, and that's like funny, or you draw people like really trying to move their arms fast, like Josie, try to move your arms fast in real life just right now.
Uh-huh. I'm definitely doing it.
Marley, look at how funny that is.
Yes, the thing I'm definitely actually seeing with my eyes is very funny.
Oh my God, because it's like you can never do it as fast as you'd think. But anyway, wait, we're talking about Star... Okay, I want to talk about Star Trek. Now, here's why I got Marley and Josie on. They unironically like Star Trek Voyager. They do. I know it may sound weird. It sounded weird to me at first. And so for 10, 15 years, I've known these guys forever. I'm always like, you know, that's a blind spot for them, but I love them anyway. Maybe because they're younger than me, and I'm like, maybe they were young and they don't know it was bad. But then I'm playing this Star Trek, this new Star Trek mobile game nonstop. It's called Star Trek Timelines. I've talked about it on a bunch of podcasts. And in it, like, you find... Like, you earn points and you can spend those points and, like, you open, like, booster packs and you get cool crew members. And they're, like, very funny. Like, like the other day, I just got Kirstie Alley from Star Trek II, the card. And I'm like, neat, I got Kirstie Alley now. And I just, the other day, I just got Q as a florist from the episode where he's like, I'm looking for a Jean Luc Picard, when they're back in time because Captain Picard's heart and blah, blah, blah. You guys remember that, right?
Yes, I do. When they're in France, right?
I don't know that I do.
Yeah.
No, not when they're in France. It's the
when he gets he goes back in time because they're like they're working on his pacemaker, which is a weirdly like thematic thing for this episode. And then he like has to replay like it's like A Wonderful Life, right?
Yes, that's that's 30 points. Nice thematic tie there, Josie. That's exactly it. And so okay, so I'm pulling this thing up now. So I'm getting all these cool Star Trek characters, like, and again, it's like Magic the Gathering. Like, you get these fun little cards. Let me look through. You're like, I got a card called Duelist Barclay, and it's a picture of Lieutenant Reginald Barclay holding two dueling swords, and I'm just like, well, that must have happened in an episode of Star Trek. I don't know that episode, but it's like, well, they're not just going to make shit up. And it's like, oh, I love this thing. But then I get a card called the Command Hologram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Robert Picardo as the emergency medical hologram. Only he's wearing a captain's uniform with four pips. And so I'm saying to myself, well, I guess if you had a hologram that could fill in for your doctor, why wouldn't you have a hologram that could fill in for your captain? And then I'm like, well, let me watch this episode of Voyager with the Command Hologram. And it's like one of the best episodes of Star Trek I've ever seen in my life. It's this episode of Star Trek where Robert Picardo has programmed himself to daydream, which is funny. Because it's like a computer would thing to do that. They'd be like, because Data was always like, I want to see what happens when I laugh. I want to see what happens when I nap. And it's like, yeah, I guess if you're a computer that's trying to simulate human activity, you just glom onto these weird big generalities like daydreaming. And so he's having these daydreams where he's a command hologram, and he's having a daydream where Seven of Nine's in love with him, and he's having a daydream where he's singing opera and everybody's clapping and like giving him presents. And I'm like, this is the craziest thing. I'm watching an episode where, like, a computer wants to be loved and is not being loved enough. And so he's made a dream where he does get the respect he thinks he deserves.
Asterius, I don't know if you've seen any more, because the emergency command hologram, the ECH, comes back in a later episode where Robert Picardo, the doctor, is beamed onto a ship and has to team up with Andy Dick, who plays another hologram to, like, safely, like, steer a ship out of, like, a war zone. And it is also very good.
Wait, I've seen one episode of Star Trek Voyager that had Andy Dick in it. Because I was like, well, I gotta see this.
Yeah, that's probably that's it.
One.
Yeah.
It's one episode.
There's that one episode. Andy Dick was not a repeat performer for it.
There's also two episodes of Star Trek Voyager with Sarah Silverman in it.
Yes.
That, I've heard that same thing. All right, guys. I'm gonna hand the wheel over to you, the con, if you will. Tell me what you like about Voyager. Give me some episodes you like. Give me your Voyager take now. Give it to me.
Well, I think, I mean, I have loved Voyager since, like, it came out on TV. It's definitely, I think Voyager gets a bad rap because, like, basically, like, everything that comes after Next Generation is just not as good. Like, and I think Voyager and Deep Space Nine both hit that period of time where serialization was coming, but we weren't there yet.
I do think, for your listeners, we should preface this by saying that Josie actually has an opinion that is much more unpopular than liking Voyager, which is that Josie dislikes Deep Space Nine.
I don't really like Deep Space Nine, and I think it's because I like the characters and the concept of Voyager much more. Like the hook of Voyager is that they're supposed to be going on like a basically a like just basic mission. They've got this prototype ship, and then alien gods, as there are in Star Trek, basically like shoot them all the way across the like galaxy to another quadrant, and it's going to take them like at top speed, like years to get 75 home.
75 years. 75 to get back years. From the Delta Quadrant.
It's the Odyssey. And so then they're actually boldly going new places. They are trying to get home, but it's so much more of an open world where you get to meet new people. Whereas Deep Space Nine, you're kind of just sitting there, and Sisko is very boring, and nobody gets thrown in the brig that as much as they should be. I understand that it's not a super popular opinion, and a lot of people like Deep Space Nine better, but outside of Quark and Odo, I'm really not a Deep Space Nine fan.
I like both shows.
Oh, point rubbing.
Okay, well, actually, Marley, you do get points now. Marley's 110 points, Josie's 70. Wait, although 110 points. Although, Josie, you're getting 20 points right away for taking an unpopular opinion and putting it out there. Now, I want to unpack that a little bit. Let's start with the caretaker. The caretaker is like the omnipotent alien god that accidentally throws the Voyager 75 years away from Earth into the Delta Quadrant. Why couldn't that have just been the Traveler or Q or any of the omnipotent gods from like the original Star Trek? And obviously I'm saying this to you both because it's like, I don't know why they had to make their own new god to fuck this up.
I think
like too many gods.
I think the reason they did it is because they wanted, if I remember correctly, in the pilot, they wanted it to be tied to that like satellite thing.
Yes.
Because Janeway decides to destroy it, which dooms them to be lost, but like stops bad guys from.
Yeah,
because
it's supposed to be a moral decision that like, yeah, they get lost there, but it's because she doesn't want to like destroy this civilization attached to this awful satellite. And I mean, Q does show up later on. Like Q shows up a lot in Voyager and is constantly hitting on Janeway, which is pretty fun. And then I think nobody remembers the Traveler. Like, I think they just forgot about the Traveler when making the show. I mean,
it is pretty amazing that because of them, like, forgetting / not caring about that thread, that Wesley Crusher goes off with the Traveler, and then in, like, Star Trek Nemesis or whatever, is just back. He's just at that wedding, and everyone's just like, "Hi, Wesley, no one cares where you've been."
Yeah. Like, the Traveler is, like, so that whole storyline is just so utterly unappealing for anybody associated with Star Trek. They're like, yeah, he, like, I don't know, went on Rumspringa, and now he's back.
Yeah, he's there at fucking Riker and Troy's wedding. And apparently, according to Will Wheaton himself, he did have a scene that was cut, and then he cried.
Oh.
And it's like, on one hand, it's like, look, if I were cut out of a movie, I would be upset. But on the other hand, it's like, shut up, Wesley. You're such a goddamn baby about
it. I like the idea that, and I'm sure some novel contradicts this, but I like the idea that Wesley really does come back and he really is like a warp speed like superpower now, and like he has like the magic Traveler Doctor Who powers, and just literally no one cares.
Yeah.
Like he is not even able to explain this to anyone because no one will listen to him long enough to explain it.
He should theoretically be cool, but then they look at his face and instantly don't care.
Yeah, but it's so difficult because, look, I would be lying if I didn't say that as a kid, I loved Wesley Crusher and was super into Wesley Crusher. Now, a lot of people, they always express the opinion where they're like, oh, you're just throwing in kid versions of characters so that kids will like it. You know, like I just want to see Batman. I don't want to see Batman hanging out with Robin. I just want to see Batman. Or it's like, oh, I just like the Smurfs. We don't need Smurflings. It's a common trope that you introduce a child-sized version of the adults to get the kids interested. But I will say it also worked.
It always worked.
Yeah.
Yes.
I always loved the kid kid character on the shows. My most unpopular opinion is, as a child, I loved Scrappy-Doo. I preferred episodes with Scrappy-Doo in them to non-Scrappy-Doo episodes.
And we've had to reconcile that in our marriage.
Oh my goodness. Okay, Marley, that's 130 points. You're ahead by 10 points. Joey, you're 120. Okay, so I was on stage once with Mark Evanier.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
He knows all about Scrappy-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
He was being like real rude or something. I was moderating a panel at like the LA Book Fair, and like Mark Evanier was just like talking over everybody. And so at one point, just to like fuck with him, like I turned to him and I went, "Wikipedia says you invented Scrappy-Doo." And he got real upset, and he was like, "Yeah, I might just leave right now." And he was trying to play it off like a joke, but he did kind of get upset. And I was like,
yeah. He has a really, really long, I think it's a blog post on his website, basically defending himself, because like he did technically create Scrappy-Doo, but he wants no credit for that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I'm sorry. You have become like Death, Destroyer of Doo. Like, you made it. You made Scrappy-Doo.
I think the deal is like they told him to make Scrappy-Doo, but like he is the one who did it.
He was only following orders. Isn't that what they always say? All right.
Yeah, the classic defense for children's cartoonists.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's go. Speaking of following orders, let's go back to Star Trek Voyager. Q is always hitting on Janeway. Now, in the episode I watched with the emergency command hologram, by the way, everybody should watch it. I sent out a tweet saying, like, watch it before we fucking talk to this. But it's called, Tinker Tenor...
Doctor Spy, right?
Yes, Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy. It's a really goddamn good episode. But I feel kind of two ways about it. Because on one hand, there's like a bunch of dream sequences where Robert Picardo is like, mm-hmm. B'Elanna Torres, Captain Janeway, and Seven of Nine are all kind of having a cat fight over who gets to date the Doctor. And on one hand, I'm like, this seems kind of sexist. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would ever see like Picard and Riker and Worf arguing over who gets to take out Troy. Like, I don't know that you would do that. And again, with Q hitting on the captain, it's kind of like, are you kind of only doing this because you can? Because it's like, oh, the captain's a lady. What if Q hit on her?
I would argue that Q hits on Picard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What? 50 points tomorrow. Good job.
I will say, like, I think the episode we're talking about, a lot of Voyager episodes have a lot of fun sort of playing with the conventions and playing with the like idea of genre. Like there's a bunch of like holodeck episodes based off of like a 1950s sci-fi like holo novel that like Paris puts together. And like I think Voyager, more than a lot of the other Star Treks, like has a lot of fun just poking fun at the idea of science fiction.
Yeah, like they like that holo novel one, like they basically use it as an excuse to have their cast make like an old Buck Rogers episode.
Yeah, yeah. Complete with like Janeway having to be like the like Ming the Merciless like character, which is super fun. And they even carry it into the regular show. Like there's an episode where they have to basically like build a shuttle from scratch. And like Paris is a big fanboy. So he just turns it, like everything is like knobs and dials and like kind of like steampunky and kind of like 1950s retro. And like from that episode onwards, people are like constantly getting mad at him that he didn't just use the regular interface, that everything's like a goddamn button on the shuttle.
I will say, I think that's really funny.
Just real quick, I'm sorry, Marley. Okay, that does sound good. But Voyager's bad, but that does sound good. Okay, so you guys are making your case. I'm sorry, Marley, what were you going to say?
So what I was going to say, I think the legitimate criticism of Voyager, and I think the thing that bothers some people, is that because of what Josie was saying about it being created on the edge of serialized television, it has a premise that would lend itself to a very serialized show.
Yes.
And it did not follow through on that premise.
Yes.
So there is an aspect of Voyager where it promises you one show in the pilot that it basically doesn't give you.
Like, there are...
And that is hard for a lot of people to get past.
And I will say, like, I think there is... there are episodes that are very serialized, and then there are episodes that are very episodic. It kind of feels like... when sort of the split of all the Star Trek producers happened and Deep Space Nine happened on one hand and Voyager happened the other, it was like both of them were trying to figure out serialization, but Rondi Moore was on Deep Space Nine.
My understanding is that Rondi Moore was on Voyager, was trying to turn it into Battlestar Galactica.
And then when he got pushed out,
he went over to Deep Space Nine, and it's when Deep Space Nine got more serialized.
Which, and then it was like Brandon Braggin, I can't remember the woman's name, who also produced it. I kind of think that like a lot of what people are reacting to with Voyager is that basically of the two ways TV could go, sort of like quasi-serialized and episodic versus incredibly serialized, which is what Deep Space Nine turned into, like all of TV went in the incredibly serialized route. So I think some of people's reactions to Voyager is that like, it feels weird because it is weird. Like it's basically like a type of in between serialization and episodic that we abandoned.
Because the two premises of the show are that A, half the crew are from the terrorist Maquis faction.
Yep.
And half the crew are Starfleet. So you would think the show would be about them learning to get along, but they do that in one episode and then it never comes up ever again.
I mean, it comes up whenever they need it to come up.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of forgetting what's happening and then suddenly it's back again.
And then the other thing about the show should be sort of tracking the degradation of the ship and them losing resources.
Yeah.
And it's not like they ignore it, but what they do is they have them get the ability to completely refuel and repair often enough that they might as well not have that issue.
But I think part of the charm of it, though, is that you can still have those episodic episodes where, like, they are all on the holodeck or meeting, like, hologram aliens, and it's, like, feels very much like an old episodic, like, Next Generation. Even sometimes it feels like a little, like, original Star Trek. And then you also get to have those episodes, like, Year in Hell Part 1 and 2, where it is incredibly gritty. It's, like, them going through an area of space where there's no stars and they're constantly being attacked and you're just watching the crew slowly die and dwindle and the ship getting ripped apart as they're desperately trying to like make it across this area of space.
Yeah, but then they undo it with time travel.
They do, well...
100 points to Miley!
Okay. They undo it so that Harry Kim and Naomi can come back, which is like the baby character. They're not going to kill the baby. No Star Trek is going to kill a baby. But
they don't
have to. Battlestar Galactica sure as fuck did.
Well, sure. Rondi Moore left Voyager.
Yeah, he did. Here's what else.
My favorite thing about, besides really liking some of the characters, I really like Janeway, I really like the Doctor, I really like Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
But the part of Voyager that I think is really cool is they do actually, it's not completely episodic, they do track what sector of space they're in and what aliens live in that sector.
And so that,
essentially every season is like, oh, we're in X sector this season, and they're dealing with that alien civilization's bullshit, and then eventually they pass them and you never see them again.
Yeah.
You start dealing with a new alien's bullshit, and that's cool.
Yeah. Hmm. And I will also say, I think one of the main reasons that I really love the show, and probably unfortunately a main reason why a lot of people don't, is the best characters on that show are all the female characters. Like outside of the Doctor, who is a fantastic character, Janeway, B'Elanna Torres, Seven of Nine, like they're the ones who have the meatiest stories and the most interesting arcs and the most conflict. Like even like characters like Paris, who started out as like, oh, he's like a devil may care flyboy, like eventually settles down and they kind of stop doing stories about him. But like, it's the core of that show is about these women who are all butting heads, who are all leaders, and who are all like sort of like making really hard decisions to like who like gets to live or die sometimes. How do they like handle humanity?
Wow.
And like, I think, you know, like, it's something that like I really responded to as a kid, because it wasn't, I think a lot of people are like, oh, girls just like Star Trek because, or girls just like Voyager because there's a female captain. But it was, there's so many female characters who are great. And that's really something you don't get to see that often. And also, I will say women in general like Star Trek. Like the first Star Trek conventions were started by women. Like our convention culture comes out of the female fans of original Star Trek who started dressing up, who started going to these conventions. Like I think like this is turning into rant, but Star Trek and like pop culture owes a big debt to like female original series fans.
Yeah, I would actually say that people think that women only like Voyager because of the female captain. I would argue that women like all Star Treks. Men only don't like Voyager because of the female captain.
Okay. Well, hold on. I got to start awarding some points because you guys laid down a bunch of good science there. All right, Josie, you're getting 50 points for passion.
Great.
And also, look, I agree with... Look, everything political you just said, I agree with, so just take it as read. But let's start talking about... Look, let's really get pedantic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, like, in the pilot... And I haven't seen the pilot since I was a kid, but I remember watching the pilot and being like, oh, God. Like, and I was also nine. I was seeing problems with the pilot. Yeah, I'm sorry, Marla, what were you going to say?
I would also throw out there that the first couple seasons of all of the Star Trek shows are bad.
Yeah, I mean, the first season of, like, Next Generation, like, third episode in, they're all getting space drunk and having sex.
Wait,
like,
that's a good episode. That's a bad example.
Yeah, that's the one where Dana has sex with Tasha Yar. Okay.
Yes.
But it was a weird, choice for the third episode.
Yeah.
That classic true. Thing of, like, you can't have an episode where the joke is everyone's acting different than normal when we don't know what's normal yet.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Marley? All right. You guys are very good at this. Marley, you're getting 20 points because you're right. Anytime I'm watching an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where there's that line on their uniforms on the shoulders, I'm like, I'm not going to watch this. Unless it's the one where, like, there's a trial about whether or not Data is, like, deserving of his own rights. But,
Which is, I think, a later episode.
Also, just because I've had this thought before and I'm going to forget it, one thing I don't see people talk about Voyager that often is Tuvok as an actual full Vulcan.
Yes.
Has a couple of great episodes where he basically, because everyone treats Tuvok the way they treat Spock. Everyone's always like, oh, so emotionless. Maybe try thinking with your gut for once, Tuvok. And every now and then, Tuvok will basically be like, fuck you, I'm a full Vulcan. If I got in touch with my emotions, it would be bad.
Like, there is a couple of great Tuvok basically, like, reading the rest of the, like Voyager crew for filth, being like, I'm a Vulcan. What's your problem, racist?
Yeah. Okay, Marla, that's another 20 points. That's a really good point.
Like,
all right.
They do a great flashback episode where you find out that Tuvok, as a young Vulcan, was on Sulu's ship during Star Trek
VI. That's right! Yes!
And he's, like, going in and out of Star Trek VI's plot, and basically you find out he quit Starfleet for decades because of basically Starfleet being racist to Vulcans.
Okay, God damn it, you guys are making this sound good. That's another 30 points. Because I fucking got a card in my Star Trek card game. It was called Cadet Tuvok. And it's him dressed up like in the movies, you know, with the red, the all red uniform, and he's holding a cup
of... Yep, that's that episode.
He's like bringing a cup of coffee to Sulu, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And then, by the way, the thing that you guys said about the 1950s, like, there's also... One of the cards that I got is, like, in black and white, and it's like, it is referencing some sort of weird sci-fi holo novel. And the Delta Flyer and all this other shit.
Yeah.
But look, I want to get pedantic here. Come on. They can't. Okay. In the pilot, they're like, well, hold on. Let me see if I can do my Captain Janeway as Katharine Hepburn impression. In the pilot, they're like, well, luckily, the holodeck energy runs on its own energy source that we can't possibly transfer to shields or engines. Therefore, we'll be able to use the holodeck all the time, and you won't have to worry about why we can use the holodeck, because if you think about it, you would think that we would want to divert that power. So we can't. There's no moving holodeck energy, Chakotay. And it's like, really? You can't? You got characters in this guy. You got people going to warp 20. You got Scotty fucking doing this and that, and you can't shut down the holodeck so use it to power the replicators? Defend it.
No, I think the show would have been better if they didn't have a holodeck.
Yes! Thank you, Marley! That's another 20 points because it would force them to think holodeck episodes.
No!
They have, like, two really great holodeck episodes, but it's not worth it. They also have some really terrible holodeck episodes.
They
also have, like, trapped in an Irish pub for a whole episode.
Yeah.
And stuff like
what? That. Tell there's me also, about this episode with their trapped also in the Irish great pub?
There's also the great World War II episode that happens where, like, they're all stuck in...
I don't know that it's so great.
No, but it's super fun. They're all, like, part of the debate, French Resistance.
Debate, guys.
See,
none of my favorite Voyager episodes are holodeck episodes.
Like, I will admit, there is a season that they, like, keep going to a fucking, like, Irish pub that they've made, and it's not super great.
Yeah,
like,
essentially,
it's really boring.
One of the way Voyager's handled its budget is they... every season basically created a permanent holodeck set that the crew goes to hang out, and they would switch it up every season. And the season when it's like an Irish pub is a bummer.
Yeah.
Wait, what were those sets?
There's like a 40s like lounge set.
Isn't one like Janeway makes like Archimedes Workshop or something? Or
yeah, not Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, Leonardo da Vinci's workshop just hangs out there.
Yeah, then there's a season where then there is one that is like a French town. Like under Nazi control, which is when I think the Hirogen take over the ship and lock everybody in the holodeck erase their memories.
There's an episode where their enemies basically turn the holodeck into a
prison.
A prison where they can hunt them over and over.
Yes. Jesus. Which is a great reason to have a holodeck.
The Hirogen. There's a season where the sector of space they're in is controlled by basically Predator.
Yeah.
A race of Predator.
I was just going to say that in a way to attack the show you're defending. I just learned about the Hirogen because like I'm getting all these Hirogen cards and I had to spend like a whole arc fighting the Hirogen, because like the Hirogen wanted to hunt the Dominion and you had to kind of decide whose side you were on, and I'm like, but they're just Predators, right? So they Predators in Star Trek, right?
I mean, what it really is Klingons. It's like Klingons and Predators had a baby. They're the Hirogen.
Yeah, okay. It's hunting instead of battle, but it's the same hunting the way Klingons.
Yeah, they're like it's an honor system, which is why the World War II analogy works so well, because like they're in this like hologram and like there's like a whole like philosophical bent to that episode where like one of the Hirogen commanders is like, well, maybe this is a way to like save my people. If we could take this holodeck technology and let our people like hunt in that, maybe all of them wouldn't die when they go out hunting other species. And like it's a recurring theme in Voyager of like what is better, the individual or the society? Like you're making the decision to destroy society to save yourself, or like destroy your chance to get home to save a society. And that comes up pretty much every season, a lot of the times at the big turning points.
God damn. All right, that's another 50 points for Josie. Wow, you managed to defend the Hirogen. Very good job. All right, again, let's get pedantic.
How do you feel about Neelix? Josie, can...
Josie, how do you feel about Neelix? Thank you, Marley.
What is the name of the episode where he and Tuvok get turned into Tuvix?
Tuvix?
Yeah, I prefer Tuvix to Neelix.
Everyone prefers Tuvix. Do you know about this? Do you have a Tuvix card, I assume, Asterios?
No, but anyone can make a Tuvix card at any time by merging a Tuvok card and a Neelix card. And that's you get a Tuvix card.
So,
but the thing is, I'm watching this because everyone likes Tuvix. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to check in Tuvix. This was a couple of months ago. And then I'm like, so I hear in the end, and by the way, for listeners, Neelix and Tuvok got, I don't know, there's a transporter accident and they were
transporter fused, and the deal basically is nobody in the show, everyone thinks Neelix is annoying and that Tuvok is like a bore.
Yeah.
And so everybody on the entire show likes the merging of them better.
And like it gets real pretty dark meta. Because they can fix them, and like basically the end of the show is Tuvix pleading for his life and they're like, nah man, we already paid for these other two actors.
We have to kill you.
And so like he like is tearfully essentially put to sleep, and they like pull Neelix and Tuvok back out, and like they do, that is one of the times where they do make it a little bit more serialized, because the next episode I think everybody's still weird about it.
Yeah.
But like I'm not super into Neelix. I like Neelix when he's interacting with Naomi, which is the little girl character who like grows up super fast because she's super cute. And I like it when he's annoying Tuvok. Any other time, I could leave him.
And no one likes Kes.
No one likes Kes.
Basically, wife when you first meet them.
Yeah, like his girlfriend,
who is like a weird alien that only lives like 10 years. So she's actually like two, but she's an adult because that's how they work. But that's still weird.
Then she like turns into like just mind, just like a brain alien. Like she leaves her like corporeal body and like just goes away.
Wait, so they fire that actress?
Yeah.
They replace her with 7 of 9.
And 7 of 9 is way better.
No, Jeri Ryan rules. Like I love Jeri Ryan. I follow her on Twitter. I just feel so bad for the actress that played Casper. They're just like, this isn't working out. We're going to turn you into a brain.
They like have
referenced.
Her for around for like a season and a half or so, and they're like, nah.
Yikes. Yeah. Okay. Here's what I want to say. So Tuvix, that's one of the reasons why I'm like, I'm not watching this show. Because like, yeah, they fucking, they're just like, yeah, you know what? Like we're sorry, being who says he's his own sentient being with his own rights and dignity. We're going to kill you. And then they kill him. And it's like, look, did you really need Neelix that bad? Like, I get that you needed Tuvok, kind of. You know, but it's like, the reason they do it, I don't buy. Now, but question. So mm-hmm. Do Neelix and Tuvok remember being Tuvix?
I think they know that it happened, but I don't think they have the memory.
Yeah, because they like talk about it shortly afterwards, and then basically Tuvok's like, well, let's never speak of that again.
Right. Yes, I mean, they had been like, we were trapped, thank you for freeing us, then I'd be like, well, I guess it was a morally correct decision they made to kill that guy.
But it's I get their misstep, like, because I agree, like, that episode is not great, especially since they had the missed opportunity to keep Tuvix around. But I think it's because it was in service of trying to hit that idea of, like, weird moral choices. And, like, what I also like about Voyager is a lot of times, like, they are wrong. Like, they just objectively make the wrong choice, or they do something that, like, makes things worse, and then they just have to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, a big idea in Voyager is just the idea that they're trying to uphold the tenets of Starfleet, but there is no Starfleet.
Yeah.
And there's no higher authority to appeal to, and there's no, there isn't actually a system of laws that they can fall back on. They're just kind of trying to improvise what they think the law would be if anyone in charge knew what was going on.
Yeah, which also leads me and Marley to our favorite part of Voyager, which is trying to impersonate Janeway as she, like, warbles that she doesn't have the luxury to throw you in the brig.
Yes! That's a... Wow! Okay, Josie, that's 150 points! My God! You guys are tied at 380 points. See, all right, I'm watching Star Trek Discovery, and Star Trek Discovery, by the way, and I've said this before, I'll keep saying it. It has the worst pilot I've ever seen.
It's a terrible pilot.
That's all we've seen.
But that's the only thing. We stopped watching because we thought it would be like that pilot.
I know, and that's the thing. This is the reason I keep talking about this, because it has the worst pilot I've ever seen, but then episode 3 is incredibly good. And episode 4 and 5 and 6, like, episode 3 is essentially a pilot. You get the sense that Paramount was like, hey, we watched what you think the pilot is. Shoot another dumber version of it and put it and air it before. So, like, I would suggest you guys watch episode 3 and forget the whole pilot. I mean, like, you don't need the pilot.
I mean, the real reason we haven't watched it is because we're incredibly successful entertainment professionals that don't want to give CBS $5.
What? Come on!
We're incredibly petty. We're like, well, we'll get it maybe when the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone comes on, but because that's two for our money. And
You guys don't want to watch The Good Fight? I like The Good Wife, to be honest. I think The Good Wife is really good. I haven't seen The Good Fight yet, but I like The Good Wife. But you know, I think Star Trek Discovery handles this moral choice stuff super goddamn well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, towards the end of the first season of Star Trek Discovery, the Klingons are about to win the war.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty awesome. Like, Starfleet is decimated. And, and they are given the choice, like, the Starfleet doesn't know this, but, like, a bad guy in Starfleet, like, plants a bomb at the center of the Klingon homeworld. And half of Starfleet is like, yeah, we should definitely blow up the Klingon homeworld. It would be awesome. And the other half of Starfleet is like, no, even though we're almost dead, like, we're Starfleet. Like, we can't commit genocide.
Uh-huh.
And they find a very cool way to do it where both sides win. And I won't spoil it, but, like, they find, like, the Captain Picardiest solution to this, where everybody wins. And I feel like a lot of Voyager is grimdark for grimdark's sake, where it's just like, yeah, if you were on the edge of the frontier of space, you'd have to do some bad shit too. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that's true, but I don't know why you think that's entertaining. What do you guys think?
I mean, I kind of think some of why you're able to enjoy what's going on in Discovery is because, like, Voyager and Deep Space Nine honestly laid the groundwork for that. Like, they were the first shows breaking the Roddenberry mold of, oh, this has to be a utopia. There cannot be conflict.
Yeah, and I think, I would say Deep Space Nine does that way more
than
during the Dominion War stuff.
Yeah, I would say that's part of the reason I'm not a big Deep Space Nine fan is I didn't like how grim, like, there is a lot of grim Voyager, but because there's so much of that, like, light episodic stuff, like, you get a palate cleanser, you get a break. Like, I tuned out of the Dominion War. Like, I was watching Deep Space Nine, and Dominion War is kind of where I stopped watching because I was like, I don't really want to watch, like, a realistic war.
Also, I mean, I completely get why people do it because it creates this drama, and also it's something that original series and Next Generation didn't do, which means it's there to do.
Right.
But I think it's tough. I think it's really, really hard to do wartime Star Trek. I think there's a reason original series sets up the timeline as in between wars, essentially.
Yes.
Like, they did fight the Romulans. They did fight the Klingons. They are currently in a Cold War. Because I think the sort of star, like, obviously, the rejoinder to this is, well, if the Star Trek ideals are strained by the concept of a war, but war obviously exists in Star Trek, you should strain them. That's interesting drama. And I get that, but I kind of think it falls apart.
Well, because it's like, I don't want to watch World War II in space. Like, I can watch that. I mean, there is an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine that kind of sets this up beautifully. The crew of the Defiant are trapped on an alien world where a bunch of Starfleet guys are trying to figure out whether or not they're trying to, like, decode a Dominion transponder. And like, they all get attacked by, like, invisible minds and Bill Mumy is in it, and it's his first appearance after the end of Babylon 5, where he played Lanier. Bill Mumy also played the creepy kid in the original Star Trek, where he was voiced by Clint Howard. But anyway, it's like, so I'm watching this episode of Deep Space Nine, where, like, all these Starfleet guys are just getting killed one by one in World War One style trench warfare, but instead of worrying about chlorine gas, they're worrying about invisible mines, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't a fun way to spend my Saturday. That's a very good point, Marley. Like, that's another 50 points. Good point.
It's definitely something that when you start writing about a war, you also, like everything else that is Star Trek has to be shoved to the side, because a lot of Star Trek is exploring, like, ideas and, like, what it means to be human, what it means to be human in, like, different circumstances, what it means to be human, like, in trying to, like, avoid conflict. When you're writing a war, all it means is you're talking about war, like, and everything else that you're, like, trying to explore kind of falls by the wayside.
Well, I think also we're at a time right now where we have a lot of trouble grappling with even the concept of utopian fiction.
Yes.
Because I think we're in such a, like, pop culture, postmodern deconstructionist mode right now that whenever anyone gets a hold of something like Star Trek or, you know, like Wonder Woman that's supposed to be deliberately utopian, their first thought is, yeah, but really it would be bad. And I'm like, yeah,
yes!
It would be. It would be bad. You're right. You win. That's why our world isn't like that.
But, like, I do think that, and this is where, like, I get, like, really, like, old fan Star Trek-y, like, part of the appeal of Star Trek is the utopia, that, like, at the end of the day, you can make moral choices. And weirdly, even me saying that is part of the reason why I like Voyager, is it gave me, as, like, a Star Trek fan, a sort of, like, parameters and world for them to be able to break that mold a little bit and tell stories, but, like, still be exploring the ideas of, like, what does it mean to be human without feeling like, and then you've just tanked the entire idea of the Federation down the drain. Like, you've ripped out the rug underneath the utopia that is the, like Earth. I think it's an important thing, and part of the reason I'm not as big a fan of some of the newer Star Trek stuff, that, like, there is a utopia and they have solved a lot of these problems.
Yeah, I mean, I know people give Roddenberry rightfully a hard time for basically wanting there to be no personal drama in Next Generation.
Right.
Obviously, that was a mistake.
That's a hard way to write a show.
But what I appreciate about Next Generation is, like, they just tell you. They just say, yeah, there is no more greed. There is no more materialism. There is no more war. Yes, that doesn't really make any sense, but we're telling you that's the case.
And, like,
and you have to work with that.
Yeah. That's a very there's a fun aspirational aspect to it, too. And that, like, you're, like, you know, growing up and watching them being like, ah, here's a world where we've gotten rid of war. Like, there's, here's other wars we can, like, talk about. But, like, there's, like, something, like, really, like, nice about that that I think, like, our media landscape is lacking right now.
No, I will.
Sorry, this is supposed to be a comedy podcast, no, and boy, are we getting very serious about our philosophies on Star Trek.
Here's the thing about Star Trek, for a show that is so consistently goofy over the years, it's also very humorless at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Yes! Look, this isn't, I always hate it when people come on, like I specifically tell people, do not tell jokes, just give me your opinions. Because it's like, if you want to hear jokes, go to the fucking Comedy Cellar or something. Like,
one will ever do
No
that.
One will ever go to the Comedy Cellar.
Exactly. Fuck you twice. But, okay. All right. I want to bring this home. You guys have made Star Trek Voyager sound pretty highfalutin. The proof is in the pudding, though, because, look, I could give a speech about why, like, Babylon 5 is the best thing ever, then you watch it, you're like, but this is kind of silly. All right, so give me, both of you, give me just a couple episodes of Voyager that our audience should try on. Because it's like, right now, Voyager, the fandom's opinion of Voyager is in the toilet. So, like, you can't expect someone to just, like, watch 7 seasons of it. Give someone an episode or two they could try.
I don't know the names of any episodes because I'm not that kind of person. Mm-hmm. But whatever the, like, two-part Borg story that introduces 7
yes,
of 9 is pretty cool.
Great.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
And I can't remember the name of it, but that two-parter is fantastic because it also introduces, like, a really interesting biological foil to the Borg. It's also right before they, like, the movies introduce the Borg Queen, which I think ruins the concept, but it's really,
unfortunately,
cool.
Once First Contact introduces the Borg Queen, Voyager is like, yoink, and starts using her all the time.
And she
and
sucks.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Sort of going along those lines, I would also say the episode Omega is really good, which is an episode where it sounds really weird, but it's they discover basically an unstable particle that 7 of 9 becomes obsessed with because it's the Borg idea of perfection, and this unstable particle starts ripping the ship apart, but she still wants to study it because this is the closest she will ever get to perfection now that she's no longer part of the Borg. And it's a really fascinating episode with a lot of really good, like, Janeway, like, 7 of 9 infighting that, like, really, like, gets to the heart of, like, what I think, like, makes, like Voyager explores the Borg as a concept more thoroughly.
There's also a great episode where the Doctor goes to a planet that has never heard of music and becomes their first musical star.
And Paul Williams plays, like, the head of the, like, alien, like, council, but he does not sing in that episode, which is a missed opportunity.
It's very strange.
But Robert Picardo gets to sing opera songs, like, the entire episode. There is, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it might have been called something like Lair of the Spider Queen. There is the black and white episode.
Yeah, that one is fun.
That they do where Tom Paris is, like, basically Buck Rogers hologram, like, actual hologram aliens from the outside, like, zap into it and think this is the real world. So now the whole crew, in order to talk to these aliens and get them to stop fucking with the ship, have to take on the roles of Ming the Merciless and, like, Flash Gordon and all of these, like, basically, like, 1950s, like characters in order to, like, talk to these aliens.
Hey, do you want to hear an actual, like, labor rights reason to be mad at Voyager?
Sure.
Marley, we're supposed to be defending
I know,
it.
But this is just really interesting.
Sure, that's true.
So the guy who plays Tom Paris plays a character in the Starfleet Academy episode.
Yes.
He's like an admiral's son.
I know this story, but tell people. I hate this story, but tell people the story.
That's true.
So the original idea of Tom Paris was that character was basically getting. Well, he was, like, breaking rules. They were, like, violating Starfleet Academy things, and Wesley was caught up in it. And, like, basically, Wesley's going to be expelled because he fell in with a bad crowd, and the bad crowd is, like, run by this, like, admiral's son. And they all get caught at the end, and Wesley gets, like, a slap on the wrist because, of course, he does. And the guy that the Tom Paris actor plays, like, goes to jail. And so the entire the when you
well,
meet
to be
Tom
fair,
Paris,
a cadet dies in a shuttle accident.
No, I'm not saying he shouldn't have gone to jail. I'm saying Wesley should have gone to jail too.
Yeah, he should have. All right, good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
No, I'm saying they should all have gone
yes,
to jail.
They fucked that up.
So in the pilot of Voyager, you meet Tom Paris, and he's like a disgraced son of a Starfleet admiral, and he's in jail, and they get him out of jail to put him on this mission because they need him. So obviously, the idea was the actor was reprising his role as his character from Next Generation, but they changed the name so they wouldn't have to pay the writer who created him on Next Generation.
Yeah, and it's that kind of goes back to Roddenberry's original sin of writing the lyrics. This is something a lot of nerds know, but just in case you don't, you know, the Star Trek theme song is amazing and it's iconic. And so under ASCAP rules or whatever the music union is, like the guy who wrote it is supposed to get 100% of the royalties. But then Gene Roddenberry was like, but I want half of those royalties. So he wrote lyrics to the Star Trek theme that he knew would never make air and that never made air so that Roddenberry would keep half of those royalties. So for this fucking like utopian, oh, we're a bunch of hippy dippy, everybody, there's no money, there's credits. Like everything is cool. Star Trek sure finds a way to rip off writers a lot. Motherfucker. Well, anyway, that has been your episode of Science Friction. I'm your host, Asterios Kodos. With us today has been Marley Oppengrazer, Josie Campbell. Are you guys on Twitter? Can you tell people about your Twitter? Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Cozy Jamble on Twitter, and cozyjamble.com is also my website.
And I am Marley HG, so MarlyHG.
All right, guys, and I'm going to stay.
I don't have a website.
You don't need one. Oh, God. This has been Science Friction.
Wait, who won? Who won? Who
got the Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You got to tell us. Did you at least count?
Of course I did. No, I have them here. Now, Marley technically has the most points. He has 420 points to Josie's 380.
What could be technical about that?
But Josie was very passionate. But I disagree with Voyager. There's a lot of problems with it. When they're like, we've got a compliment in the pilot, they're like, and again, I swear to God, I haven't seen the pilot in 20 years and I remember all this shit. They're like, we've got to thank goodness we've got a full complement of 17,000 photon torpedoes. And it's like,
they
really?
They do keep track of those, actually. They do lose them. Like, there is an episode later on where they're like, we are down to like two photon torpedoes.
Like, the one thing they decide they can never make on an alien planet is new photon torpedoes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, that is pretty funny. Hold on. I gotta think about this just a tiny bit more.
I don't know if this will sway you at all, Asterios, but when I was actually a kid / teenager when Voyager was on, I only watched a couple episodes, and I had the full gamut of teenage boy reasons why Voyager was stupid. And it was stuff like, why can't they get home? Picard would have gotten home. Me. And then when I actually watched Voyager, when it all came out on Netflix, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good.
Okay. Admitting that you were wrong as a kid, that's another 30 points. Hold on.
I mean, this doesn't feel technical. It feels like Marley won.
No, but wait a minute.
Asterios, you sound like when I'm, because I Dungeon Master for some of our friends, and you sound like me when the characters are absolutely dead, and there's no way they are not dead, and I just don't want them to be dead.
Yeah, I heard that the other day you had, like, a dragon make a wish that made
Mar- I had to retire a character because the only way to stop an evil dragon god from rising from the ground was to bond my soul to that ground. Although, to be fair, that wasn't really Marley's fault. That was more my teammate's fault for not quite understanding it would be permanent.
That's true.
Like, they were definitely like, okay, cool, and then Josie will leave with us. I'm like, no, guys, I can't. I'm here forever now.
Yeah, the magic in her character is powering the seal that keeps the dragon god sealed away.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's what I heard that Josie did give up her character to save the world, or I guess the multiverse or all the planes or whatever. Look.
Yeah.
All right, look. Marley, you definitely win, so congratulations. The reason I'm hesitating is not obviously because I don't want to give Marley the win. It's because it's like Voyager, man. It's so complicated. It just, I mean, I don't really know what to think about. It's so difficult to think about Voyager. I'm sorry, Joseph, what were you saying?
I was going to say, if you want to try to give Voyager a chance, I would say watching everything from start to finish is not the way to go.
Yes.
I would say you want to, like Next Generation, honestly, what you want to do is cherry pick. What you want to do is like sort of bounce around and watch specific arcs or specific episodes. And that's where I think Voyager shines.
And immediately turn the episode off if it looks like it's about Chakotay.
Yeah, no Chakotay episode has ever been good.
It still bothers me to this day that they were like, that they did not keep the Maquis Starfleet tension. Because I remember there's like an episode, I remember episode 2 of Voyager, and I swear to God, this is not me going on a, like reading a bunch of shit on Wikipedia. I remember there being a scene where Chakotay's like, Belana Torres, we gotta be cool now. We're Starfleet now. Because Belana Torres is like, anytime you want to take the ship, we'll be ready to take the ship.
Well, I mean, that's the joy of Belana Torres. She never stops trying to take over.
Really?
I mean, she eventually mellows out in that she just, like, essentially calls Janeway a bitch in, like, polite terms. But, like, yeah, no, Chakotay sucks. Like, Belana Torres is great. She's just so angry all the time.
Yeah, I do. Okay, so like I'm watching Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy, and I'm like, well, I do think it's neat that Tom Paris does seem to kind of be out of a sitcom, because he's just like on the bridge riffing. He's just like, Doctor, you suck. You're a big jerk. I hate you. And then Torres also hates the Doctor, and it's like, Torres is, she reminds me a lot of Carla from Cheers. Do you think that's accurate or inaccurate?
Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I do. I guess I do like, it's interesting because I guess one of the benefits of Voyager is that you get the sense that that at some point the actors kind of took over. And they were just like, you know what, we're going to do what we want.
I mean, literally, Belana Torres, the actress, became a director and directs a bunch of the episodes at the end of the show.
Okay, I believe she also directs a lot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but don't hold that against her.
She does, yes.
Oh, but I like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., though. Marley, you've already won, but I would have taken it from you. You already won. Anyway, we're running out of time. That's been Science Friction. If you guys like this show, you can get episodes of it early. Listen to this. There are people out there who heard this episode way earlier than you did because they subscribed to patreon.com/stairs for just a goddamn dollar. You also get bonus episodes that you can only hear if you're become a subscriber. That's it. Energize! All right, that's awesome. No, they're not gonna change my mind, 'cause I